Tango Tango Papa 1725, April 10, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Nashville, Tennessee. So, I think the last time I did a podcast, I was talking about losing my temporary cap on my tooth, the last one that they worked on. And so I was able to text my dentist, and he ended up actually calling me. And he was pretty concerned that don't let that go too long, because the teeth can, I guess they can move around. You know, they if the, one of the teeth is missing, then those other teeth that are around it, I guess they kind of put pressure on each other, and they can kind of move around and cause all kinds of problems. And so that was on Sunday. So Monday, let my fleet manager, or actually asset manager, know that what had happened and that I needed to get back home as quickly as possible. So, you know, and in the meantime, the dentist has the permanent one. They were able to call up the company that makes those, and it was supposed to come in today. They were supposed to have it on, today's Wednesday. Yeah, today's Wednesday. They were supposed to have it today, and so, of course, I can't be there. The soonest I can be there when they're open is on Monday, so they've got to set up a Monday morning appointment. So in the meantime, the load that I picked up, I ended up picking a load up wherever it was. I don't quite remember what I did now, but anyway, I ended up in upstate New York. I had a load I was going to pick. Ended up picking a load up and then taking it to upstate New York, which was a little short load. And then after that, yesterday, they had me pick a load up in, Baldwinsville maybe, or I don't know. North of Syracuse, a suburb of Syracuse, south of Syracuse, kind of a suburb. Picked a load up there, and then that load was going to Clarksdale, Mississippi, but they ended up having me drop that here at the Nashville, Tennessee yard. Wait a minute. No, I unloaded in there by Syracuse. That was a little short load. Then they had me go to Rotterdam Junction, a place called Rotterdam Junction, New York. And which is about 125, 130 miles from there. And that's the load that I dropped here in Nashville. We've got a drop yard set up with this company. And then, get an empty trailer, and then they've got me, the load they have me picking up now that's going to take me home is at Portland, Tennessee, which is about 40 miles from here. 40 miles from Nashville, and then that load delivers to Bentonville, Arkansas, to one of the Walmart distribution centers there. So I'm spending the night at this drop yard. At first, they didn't have any empty Schaefer trailers, the reefer trailers, and so, I sent a message to the night dispatch people, and they finally came back, and they were going to see if they could come up with some place where I could pick up an empty trailer. And they finally came back and said, we'll just hook on to one of the Crete, empty Crete trailers, the dry box trailers, which I did, and so that's what I've done. But I'm going ahead and spending the night here anyway, because the place where I'm picking the load up at Portland doesn't have, according to the directions, it doesn't have any overnight parking, and I'd be close to being out of hours anyway, and the clock was ticking, and so it's just best to spend the night here, and then I'll get up in the morning when my break's over and go on up there, and it should be a drop and hook. Actually, it should be a drop and hook on both ends, but we'll have to wait and see how that works out. So, if all goes well, I will be home probably sometime on Friday, maybe Friday morning. And then I've got the dental appointment set up for 8 a.m. Monday. And then right after that, I'll, I told them that I'd be ready to go back to work. Because I'm really not, it's the middle of the month, I'm really not ready to take time off. Normally, I don't do that. Normally, it's the end of the month or the beginning of the month when I take my time off. So I'm going to get a couple extra days off anyway. Oh, well. So, let's see, what else has been going on? I went ahead and ordered, I have this IP camera at home that I've had probably a good year and a half, and I went ahead and ordered a second one. Since I think I talked about it, I was able to, there's this service called DynDNS.org. I think it's dynedns.org. I believe it's it might be a .com. It's probably a .com. It's dynedns. If you just dynedns, you look that up in Google or whatever search engine, and you're going to find it. But anyway, for $25 a year, you get it's a dynamic DNS service, and it works with that particular camera that I have. And so I bought another one exactly like it. They sell for, they're under $60 from Amazon. And so I have, I've had that thing set up for about a year and a half, and I'm able to kind of check on my house, kind of monitor my house. But now that I have this DynDNS service set up, the camera, basically, my DSL at home, the IP address is always changing. Sometimes it'll remain the same for two or three days. But it can change two or three times in the same day. I've seen that happen too. And so I would have to go into a browser, to find what my IP address had changed to at home. And then plug that into the, I have these apps like on my phone and the Nexus and the iPad and so on and so forth. iPod as well. I've got these apps, but I'd have to plug, find out, what the number was, the IP number that it had changed to, and put that into the app, and then it would go ahead and display the image. Well, now with this DynDNS, the way that basically what's happening, I think every 60 seconds, the camera is checking to see what the IP address is. So every 60 seconds, it notifies DynDNS. Of course, it has my the camera has my DynDNS username and password in there, the account information. It notifies DynDNS every 60 seconds what its IP address is. So basically it's saying my IP address is such and such. Then 60 seconds later it does that again and again and again, and so whenever that changes, it's updated. Within 60 seconds, it's updated. It's always updated within 60 seconds. And so whenever, but on the DynDNS end, I end up with a, basically it's a URL that points to whatever IP address that the camera updates it to. And so that's a pretty slick way of overcoming the problem of having a dynamic IP address on your home internet connection as opposed to a static one. Some companies will give you a static IP address. Some of them, they make you pay extra to have a static IP address. But if you have a dynamic one, you can kind of overcome that problem. And so now that I can open up the app and bang, there's the image. And so since that's now so easy, I can actually begin to add extra cameras, and I can, I can add basically a number of them. Probably, I don't know how many. There has to be an upper limit, but quite a few. I don't really need that many. So right now I went ahead and ordered one extra one. And I'm probably what I'm going to do is aim it out the window. Maybe aim it out of a window, and then I can kind of look outside. So I have a view in the house and one outside. Just kind of see what's going on outside. So, you know, and then of course you set the camera up. The camera does Wi-Fi, so once it's set up, then I can plug the camera in any place within my Wi-Fi range at home, which, you know, with the Apple routers, I've got a pretty good Wi-Fi range. So I can just, once that's set up, then I just put the camera wherever I want to and plug it into AC power, and it's on the network, and there it is. And so the cameras have built-in infrared, you know, that works up to about 15 meters, and that actually functions quite well, illuminating a scene in the complete dark. You can, you know, like I can open up my camera that's at home right now, and even though it's really dark in there, I can see everything just fine. So, but those cameras, you know, it has the infrared. You can pan and tilt it, remotely, meaning you can kind of move it around or make it kind of patrol back and forth. And then also the camera, you set the camera up so that it will email if it detects motion. So it's got motion detection, and it's able to email me if there's motion, you know, if there's motion. And then of course you can set a sensitivity threshold. And so the only time I usually receive an email is if once in a while one of my younger brothers will go over and check on my house, or sometimes he'll take mail in there or whatever, and of course that will trigger it. Or like when my parents are there, certainly every time they walk in front of it, that triggers it and it sends email with image, you know, with like six images in it. Or if the sun changes, you know, like the sun goes behind a cloud all of a sudden and then it comes back out of the cloud, well, that'll change the level of light, and then that registers and that triggers the camera to send you know, the email with the six attached images. So I could basically do the same thing with the second camera, set it up and you know, maybe aim it outside. You know, so I've got a view outside, and then if some, you know, an animal walks up or some person comes to the door and knocks or whatever, that camera will also email. So those are some things you can do with, you know, with an IP camera. And it can be a little intimidating to try to get something like that to work. Now, if you buy a camera like that, you know, their company, you know, companies such as Logitech will sell you cameras. Maybe, you know, if you find it at Best Buy or something. I've never actually seen one at Best Buy, but they sell them online. They'll sell you a camera that'll do something like that, but it's using their server. It won't use, you know, it's not using any kind of dynamic DNS. It overcomes that problem by simply uploading the file to, you know, or using Logitech's web services, whatever web services they have set up. Then it's kind of like the Nest thermostat. It, you know, my Nest thermostat at home is just, it's using Nest's servers. And then the apps, like in my phone, or in the Nexus, or the iPad, or the iPod, those apps are simply connecting to the next Nest server with my Nest identity, my Nest account information, username and password. And so, but what Logitech will do is, I think theirs is like $150 or more. And then there are some companies that sell these cameras, but then they're selling them with their own monitoring. You know, it's like a service. It's not really a monitoring service, but you have to pay like, you know, maybe $50 a year, $75 a year, or whatever, in order to use their server. You know, their before Nest came along with the thermostat, the Nest thermostat, there were other there are other thermostats that you have to pay a fee to use their server to kind of overcome the dynamic DNS problem. But if you can, you know, if you can figure out the dynamic DNS and you can kind of know how to make your router work, you know, as far as port forwarding, and if you have that flexibility with your ISP, then you can cut the cost quite a bit, you know. So $60 for the camera, and it's really quite a, you know, you get a lot for your money, and it's good build quality, you know, so it produces nice images, and you know, I've had the thing now for at least a year and a half. I'd have to actually go back and look, but I've had it for quite a while now, and been very happy with it. It's very reliable. So I'm gonna, as I say, I'm adding a second one. I don't know if I'll add a third one or not. I could. There's no reason I couldn't, but it would be kind of redundant to have it, you know, maybe pointed at other areas of the house. That'd be kind of silly, you know. So, because I've got it kind of the one that I have in there right now, I've got it pointed at kind of a main open area in the central part of the house, and I can actually, if I want to, I can rotate it so that it'll rotate, you know, a total of 270 degrees. So I can make it look back into the kitchen and so on and so forth. So really don't need a second one aimed at any place in the house, but you know, it would be nice to have one aimed outside. And so that's what the second camera is going to be, is probably, you know, I'm going to aim it probably out of my kitchen window would be the easiest way to do that. And so that'd be kind of fun. And then once my parents come back for the summer, they've got tablet. You know, they've got actually two now. They've got they ended up with the Nook that I had. At first they sold it to some friends that they had, and then the friends couldn't make it work and they sold it back to, you know, so my mom wanted it. And so she's actually using it. One of my nieces had gone down to visit, and so the niece was able to help her set it up, you know, because I'd kind of taken it back to, you know, like the factory, you know, like the default settings. And so she, niece, kind of helped her set it up, and so she's able to use it, and she actually likes it. And of course they also have an Amazon Kindle HD, the Fire HD is 7-inch, and they're very happy with that. So I'm going to set probably at least the Kindle up with an app that will able, with a camera viewing app. So once I do that, guarantee you they'll be looking at those cameras a lot. So I know how their minds work. You know, once those cameras are there, they're going to be looking at them. Probably as often as they look at the weather. You know, they look at the AccuWeather apps pretty frequently. And so once they have the camera and you just punch it and there it is, they'll be using that, I guarantee you. But that's kind of fun. You know, that's, you know, they're sort of practical in a sense, but it's also, it's really sort of fun just to be able to kind of look, you know, and see what's going on at home, even though it's the scene hardly ever changes. So, but that actually, I'll be able to, if that's supposed to come, that's supposed to be coming, so it should, excuse me, it should be there by the time I get there. And so I actually send it to a friend, and then I'll meet the friend for lunch, and then pick that up, and you know, it'll be just a quick little job of installing it, you know, and you know, or setting it up, and then I can put it wherever I want to. So you know, and then it will be. So got that going. So. But it'll be kind of nice to get this tooth problem taken care of. I don't know, you'd think that, you know, I kept thinking, what can I, you know, I don't want these teeth to be moving around in the meantime. What could I put in there, or, you know, wedge something in there to hold it? And really, it's not as easy as you'd think it would be. You know, because if you, let's say I came up with some sort of piece of plastic or something that I could wedge in there, well, there's no guarantee that that's going to stay in there, and I might end up, swallowing that or choking on it or so on and so forth. So that's really kind of, don't really want to do something like that. So it's not as easily to solve a problem like that as you might think it would be. So, but I don't know, it'll be kind of nice to get that, taken care of, and then, I won't have to, worry about it so much. You know, it'd just be hopefully he won't have any trouble getting his permanent, cap to fit in the place, and, that'll be that, and then I'll be able to go back to work and kind of forget about it until it's time to get my teeth cleaned again. And then hopefully everything will stay put. Now this, this cap that's being, you know, it's actually a replacement cap, because originally I had another cap on there that was on there for years and years and years and years. And it finally, I guess it finally cracked or something. And he noticed it. So, but, I really wasn't aware. I guess, it would stand to reason that, eventually a cap might, depending on what it's made out of, it might or might not, fall apart. So I'm still listening to the Bible. I got the King James Version of the Bible, the audiobook version. It's an audiobook version from Audible, unabridged, of course, and so it's lots and lots of audio, and so I'm well into the Old Testament. Probably, I don't know how much more is left of it, but it's, the Old Testament is probably, overall, is probably a little bit longer than the New Testament is. But in any case, it might be about the same, I'm not really sure, but it's interesting because as I listen to it, and I've mentioned this before, as I listen to it, different things stand out than stood out the first time. And I realized that, language, in a very real sense, language is sort of a form of algebra. If you're familiar with algebra, you've got, the idea is that you use letters as, and different symbols as sort of placeholders for unknown values, for numbers. And so you can have, like A over 2 times whatever, and, make your equation that way. And then you can kind of figure out, what's going on with the rest of the equation. You can sort of figure out the value of A. And so words and sentences, and even in terms of algebra, they say, arithmetic, they call their equations statements. And they're statements. It's almost like a story. And so, in terms of words, if you don't know what a word means, you can sort of see what the other, what the other words mean, and how the words are put together, and how the, how the statement is formed. And oftentimes, like as not, you can figure out the meaning of the word. But the thing with the Bible that is quite remarkable is that because of the word choices that are used, you can end up with multiple meanings. And so if you're not really sure, you know, the word pray, you think, well, to pray means you're going to pray to, you pray to your creator, you pray to wooden idol, or, you know, some golden calf or something, or, you know, your whatever your god is, you know, you pray to your god. Well, that's, but, you know, then there's this term, I pray thee. And so to pray really means to ask. And so, you know, you can kind of understand that, you know, because I never had really thought about that. I've heard the term, I pray thee. I've heard, you know, I've heard, seen that term in the Bible a lot of times. That's primarily where I've ran into it, but I never really gave it much thought. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of struck me, well, that means to ask. And so when you're praying, you know, you pray to God, you're asking. And I think, as I said before, you know, what do you pray, you know, what do you ask your creator for? You ask him for a new car, you ask him for a new house, or, you know, a big fat wallet, lots of money, you know, people to like you on Facebook or something. You know, what, you know, that's ridiculous. It's absurd. You know, so you ask your creator for what he thinks is right. You ask your creator, you know, to do what he thinks is right. Because what your creator thinks is right is right. So, but that's just an example. There's lots of other examples of words that are sort of, and words really are symbols. When you think about it, of course, letters are symbols, numbers are symbols, but words, you know, you put the letters together, the letter symbols together, and you end up with word symbols. And so words are symbols. Words are written symbols, you know, and they're also spoken symbols. And you can, you know, that's all we have to communicate with each other. And hopefully we all kind of have the same idea of what those symbols mean, those word symbols mean. And then, you know, as long as there's a common, if we all kind of understand what those word symbols mean, then you can start making statements, your word equations, basically, as sentences. They're sort of like word equations, or paragraphs are sort of like word equations, extended word equations. And then we're able to kind of communicate with each other through those symbols. And that's all they really are, symbols, to kind of communicate meaning, to communicate, you know, to communicate value, or, you know, the meaning back and forth. And so it really is, it's kind of an algebra. And but the remarkable thing with the Bible is that it is, and probably most spiritual writing, if it's well done, it has multiple meanings, because you have kind of a surfacey meaning. You know, you can say, well, you know, let's say the word poor in the Bible. You know, they use the word poor a lot. And, you know, most people take that on the surface value. They think, oh, it's just somebody that doesn't have any money. But it, you know, beyond that, it's somebody that, you know, if you could have plenty of money but be poor of spirit. And there's plenty of people that fall into that category, that they're impoverished when it comes to spiritual things. They're impoverished when it comes to wisdom. So then you got a different meaning, you know. And so it can be read both ways, and you know, the word name means nature, and, you know, so the name, you have the name of your creator. What's the nature of your creator? What is the nature of your creator? What is the nature of God in man. You know, that's that nature of God. That's, you know, it's an identity. But we have to want the identity. So that's why, that's one of the reasons why you can listen to the, in my case, I'm listening to it, listening to the Bible, and different things jump out at different times. And some of those stories, they're kind of probably, I don't know, more difficult to understand than other ones. But the other part of trying to understand some, you know, spiritual writing, you know, somebody's trying to communicate these kind of things, is that the person deciphering the equation, the word equation, has to have, there's an element that they have. They either have it or they don't have it, and they're able to kind of understand the meaning behind the words, and, you know, deeply understand the meaning behind the words, versus just kind of getting the surface meaning and then ridiculing it. You know, and it frequently in the Bible it talks about, you know, you have eyes but do not see, ears but do not hear, legs but cannot walk the walk, so on and so forth. And it makes reference to that quite a few times. And so there's this element, whatever it is, it's the nature of God. There's this element, it doesn't say nature, it says name. You have the name of God, means nature. The nature of God, it calls the name of God within you, calls the nature of God within you. And if you have that, then you have eyes to see and your ears are able to hear, and so on and so forth, and you're able to understand it. You know, or otherwise, if you miss that, you see and you perceiveth not. Or you hear and you heareth not, so on and so forth. So there's something, you know, that there's that element. It's, you know, it's the nature of God. It's the identity that comes from your Creator. But you either have a willingness to face that or you hate it. You end up there are people that just hate it for whatever reason, and that's kind of a mystery. That's just the way that God created us. He either put the nature in us or he didn't, you know. And it's, don't know what that mechanism is, and but it's either there or it's not. So, but. You know, that's why you can listen, read it, read the Bible, listen to it, and end up getting different things out of it at different times. You know, sometimes, you know, something will just jump out at me, and, you know, and I'm listening to this, and it's almost, you know, some of it's familiar. I've already listened through the whole thing, but some of this stuff, it's like I'm still hearing it for the first time. You know, it's kind of interesting how that works. So, but anyway, I'm kind of looking through my notes here. The other thing, you know, there's this one verse, and it's in the Old Testament, and it's kind of talking about God sort of having eyes everywhere. You know, kind of, you know, knowing our innermost thoughts, knows what we do in secret. And it's very true. You know, you think you're getting away with whatever it is. You know, I use my favorite example. Let's say you're in a bank, and the bank, you know, you got your, you know, they can't really see, and you know, they've got the pin there on the counter, and you think nobody's looking. And so you swipe the pen. You know, free pen, big deal, free pen. Nobody's looking. They couldn't possibly see you take it. So you got the free pen. Problem is, God saw you take it. Your conscience saw you take it. So then you have to kind of make excuses. You know, oh, you know, the bank, they buy those pens by the dozen. They expect people to, they put those out there so people will take them. They expect people to steal them. So you're making excuses. You know, and just in that little simple act, you're setting yourself sort of at enmity with your conscience, with your Creator. That's, your conscience is sort of the interface to your Creator. You're making an enemy of it. And then you start making excuses. If, you know, it bothers you, and then you start making excuses. And that's even worse than the original thing, taking the pen. This is the excuse. And then you might, you know, I might make you feel guilty, and, you know, because I'm telling you about it. And so you, then you think, well, I'm not going to ever admit that I'm wrong, really, directly to my conscience, but I'll compensate. I'll make it up to the bank, and I'll take the pen back. But I'm not going to admit that I did anything wrong to my conscience. You know, people do things like that. You know, they'll try to compensate in order to not have to, not have to admit that they're wrong. You know, it's the darndest thing. So that conscience is always watching us. It's always watching you. It's always there. It knows exactly what you're, you know, what goes through your mind, and then what you act on. It knows. It's there. It's watching you. There are eyes everywhere. So I realized, you know, you get a totalitarian state. You know, it's sort of the opposite. It's sort of always mimics and does the opposite. Kind of creates the opposite thing, but, you know, so a totalitarian state, you know, what do? You end up with cameras everywhere and spy, get people to spy on each other. So it kind of puts eyes everywhere. So it's sort of the external version. You know, kind of the government kind of turns into this external god, you know, this sort of man-made god with spies everywhere. You know, and so that's one of the reasons why. Because, you know, in absence of self-control, you become a slave of evil. You become a slave, sort of a slave of the outside world. A slave of, it's really a slave of evil. Whether you want to admit it or realize it or not, you're a slave of evil. And so you're sort of an externalized person. And so then that's what, you know, all the surveillance comes in. From the outside, you have people, you know, just a threat of surveillance. People spying on each other and turning each other in and so on and so forth. You know, for some sort of brownie points. They think they're going to get a brownie point of an advantage of some sort. And that's very real. You know, you look in the old Soviet Union or any communist state, there are plenty of stories of people turning on each other, turning each other in to try to get some sort of an advantage. You know, it's ridiculous, but that's how people are. And so it's a bully system. It's a dog eat, you know, an extreme dog eat dog system, and it's bottomless pit. There really is no limit to how low it can sink. And furthermore, the Bible also spends a lot of time talking about societies. You know, of course, it's mostly talking about Israel, but, you know, ancient Israel. But it applies, all of this isn't just limited to Israel, because a lot of people will say, oh, that's just Israel, and, You know, the Bible's all about Israel. The Bible is, it's talking about general principles. And so those principles apply to, you know, of course they applied to ancient Israel, but they apply to us today. They apply, you know, those principles apply, you know, they're universal principles. They apply to all societies. They apply to every human being. Whether you like that or not, it does. And so, since it applies, it spends a great deal of time talking about, well, what happens, you know, as when people fall, you know, because, you know, their sudden destruction comes up upon them and so on and so forth. What happens when sudden destruction happens? You know, what happens if you're a decent person? You know, and you're kind of looking at the world, looking at the country, and you know, it's deteriorating right before your eyes, and you can see that the fall is inevitable. What do you do? You know, you seem to be affected by it, or you know, at the very least, see that it's kind of distressing to see it fall apart, see it systematically taken apart. But on the other hand, you know, the Bible spends a great deal of time, you know, and there's a lot of references, you know, talking about where God hardens people's hearts, kind of gives them over to their own delusions, you know, and basically trips them up even worse. They're given a chance, but then, you know, if they reject the chance too many times, or at the wrong time, it's usually too many times because they're given multiple chances, they reject it, and to their peril. And then they end up being given over to their delusions, being given over to their own devices. And they end up reaping what they've sown. And so, rather than, I don't know, the tendency, at least for me, has been, and I think a lot of people has been, we've got to try to preserve what we have and so on and so forth. And that's all well and good, but we've made a huge mistake. Now, I'm not a parent. You know, knowing what I know now, if I ever was, there's no way I'd say, and I've made this statement before, no way I'd ever send my kids to public school because it's a cesspool, and I don't care, you know, you can make all the excuses in the world for it, but generally speaking, it's a cesspool, and they're screwing the minds of the kids, you know, and the parents are usually doing a pretty good job of that at home to start with, and then the school just kind of takes over where the parents leave off. But they're screwing their minds and turning them into good little socialists. You know, teach them to hate their parents, and that's easy because the parents are already hateable. You know, get them to hate their parents, and then, you know, love the state, and look to the state for, you know, handouts and what have you. And, you know, most homes, or the vast majority of homes, don't have any love in them. And I'm not talking about the kissy kissy huggy huggy kind of love. You know, they're not the there's different types of love, and I'm not talking, as I say, I'm not talking about the kissy kissy huggy huggy here's your Xbox, go get out of my hair type of love. That's not love. What real love is, real love is correcting. I'm loving you right now. You may not feel like it. I may give you a kick in the butt, but I'm loving you right now. Real love, especially when it comes to parents, real love, you correct your kids. The idea, and I'm not a parent, again, I'm not, and I never will be. But the idea is, that you have your kid or kids, and your job as a parent is to put them in, you know, create an environment in which they are able to, you're able to kind of awaken something within them so that they have, you're awakening the nature of God within them. That's your job, is to awaken the nature of God within them. And then they're self-correcting. They have their own relationship with their Creator. They've got their own God-given identity, and they're self-correcting, self-directing. They don't need any kind of external authority to keep them on the right path. That's your job as a parent. It's not to spoil them. It's not to put them in front of the Xbox and make sure they've got all kinds of games and what have you, or have their slimy friends. They're looking, you know, if it's a good kid, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for correction. They're not looking to, you know, for the, you know, the affection's fine. Sure, kissy kissy, huggy huggy's just fine, but that's really not what they're looking for on a deeper level. They're looking for what they really want is, they want you as a parent to help them find, help them awaken, help awaken that nature of God within them. That's what they want. Because when we're born very close to that. Of course, we don't have language yet when we're born, but we're very close to that. We're not 100% with it, but we're really close. And so your job as a parent is to help awaken that, the seed of that within the child. And of course, it, you know, most parents fail. You know, 99.999999999% of parents are failures. They're horrible, rotten. They fail, and yet they think they're doing a great job. And as a result, our country is in the state that it's in. People are given over to their wicked desires, their strange desires, strange spirits, so on and so forth. And people, you know not the nature of God within them. They are separated from that identity, and therefore they're empty. Why do you think these people, we have all these shootings and so on and so forth, why do you think that's happening? You say, oh, they're just crazy, whatever. Why are they empty? Why would someone be so empty, a teenager, be so empty as to think that, well, I'll be famous by shooting killing the maximum number of people? How could that be? If that kid had meaning, if he had genuine meaning in his life, if there was real love, correcting love in his family, in his family life, do you think that would happen? Of course it wouldn't happen. If his parents were awakening the nature of God within him, do you think that would happen? Of course it wouldn't happen. Because he would have something real and tangible. If you have a genuine relationship with your creator, you know, and I'm not talking the fake and phony, you know, that you see on TV, you know, these TV preachers that, you know, go through all their stuff and do their little song and dance and so on and so forth and put on a nice little show. I'm not talking, that's fake. You know, and if you have your little emotional thing, you know, where you ask Jesus to come into your heart and all that, and it's emotion, you're fooling yourself. You've just fooled yourself. Because it's not emotional. This is not an emotional thing. If you've got the real thing, that is the differences between, you know, it's more than the difference between night and day. If you've got the real relationship, then, you know, the emotional thing, it's as nothing. It's like a little shadow. That's a little nothing. So if these parents were doing even a halfway decent job at really correctively loving their children, then none of this would be happening. But of course they're not. And then, you know, of course the parents don't know. They weren't loved either. Their parents didn't love them. You know, it's the blind leading the blind. And so at some point it you know, it's just lost. And what's the point of that going on? You know, why would you continue with a society where the blind are leading the blind, and it just becomes, it marches off into a cesspool, marches off into an ocean of dung. That's pointless. So God destroys that society. You know, it makes it very clear that, and it even, you know, this world is like a furnace. You know, where God produces people, human beings, that are called by His nature, that are called by His name, by His nature. And that's why we're here. That's, you know, so this is never intended to be a perfect world. At least the world we're in right now, it's not intended to be a perfect world. And we're not here to have the maximum amount of pleasure that we can, pleasure ourselves to death. We're not, you know, the point of existence is not to, you know, make the most money and have the most pleasure and so on and so forth. That's empty. It's a waste. You know, those things are fine. It's fine to, you know, have a nice meal or whatever that tastes good. That's great. But that's not why we're here. Those things are empty. Those are empty experiences. And the more you pursue them, the emptier they become. So what do you pray for? You pray that your Creator's will is done. You pray that whatever God thinks is right, that's what should happen. Or you ask God for more of His nature, to awaken more of His nature within you. And those are really, you know, or you could ask God to awaken His nature within the rest of society. you know, as many people as possible. That's a worthy prayer. But as far as asking for this or that, it's a waste of time. You know, people have these things that they say, and there are all these pre-programmed statements that they say. And they're just wasting their breath. It's all empty. Meaningless gibber. But they don't even know what's real, and in fact, if they're confronted with something that's real and genuine, they're probably going to run the other way. There's a good chance that they might. So, anyhow, I think I'll go ahead and cut this off, get it uploaded, get headed to bed so that I can get up in the morning once my break is over and see if I can get that load picked up and then get headed towards Arkansas. So, by the way, it's rather warm here. It was like, I think their high here is 82 or 83 degrees today in Nashville. Now, at home, it's supposed to freeze tonight. It was, the last time I looked, I think it was about 37 degrees. And at one point, I did look at the camera at home. At one point this afternoon, there was a pretty intense storm that went through there. I guess it really rained. So at one point, I actually brought the camera up. Well, there's a couple of points there. It was actually really dark. It was almost as dark as what it would be with the built-in infrared, you know, as far as the illumination goes. It was pretty dark. I've never seen it that dark in the middle of the day. And it did that a couple of times. So that was pretty interesting. And that's just kind of one of those fun little things. It would have been fun to look outside, you know, see out the window. So I'll have that capability. But so at some point tomorrow, once I start heading west out of Tennessee, at some point I'll probably end up running into the cold front somewhere. So probably end up in some rain. But here right now here in Nashville, it's still fairly warm, and I'm actually running my little air conditioner here in the truck, the battery-operated air conditioner. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.